And good evening to you all. I wonder if you've started planning your Christmas viewing. I'm beginning tonight with the sports personality of the year. What's on your Christmas list? If you've got the Radio Times, you've no doubt planned it already. It's not the time for gritty realism, unless you're hooked on the soaps. And somehow there is a kind of perverse pleasure in finding that some people are more miserable than we are. But for most of us, this is the time of year to escape. And doesn't matter how far you'll travel, maybe back in the midst of time with Merlin, way into the far distant future with Doctor Who. Doesn't matter what we watch, but we want the result to be the end. At the end, to be absolutely good. All will work out well. The goodies will triumph, the baddies will get their comeuppance, the lovers will be united. That's the dream. So Downton Abbey last Christmas was classic Christmas viewing, wasn't it? We've been waiting for weeks and weeks and weeks. Would they get together? And eventually, Lady Mary and Matthew Crawley got engaged. And there's a nice gasp and a sigh of satisfaction. That's what we want. Because largely, we sense it's not like that most of the time. Don't know what kind of year you've had. Some will have had wonderful years, celebrations of marriages and births and all sorts of fun and games. But for others of you, it's been a miserable year. And you're looking forward to the chance just to hibernate, put on the fire, forget the world outside, and watch that nice, glowing television, warm feeling. Maybe that's why you're here. In your mind, at least, you're doing much the same this evening as you do when you watch some fantasy on the television. This is escapism. You don't really believe in all that stuff about the Virgin Mary and the wise men, no more than you believe in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But it's nice, isn't it, to forget reality and just pretend these things are true, just to cheer us up. But if that's you, I'm going to be rather rude this evening. Really annoys me when I go into the film, I want to escape, and I'm just lost in Narnia or wherever I'm watching. And then someone sitting next to me gets out a suite, it's always sitting next to me, and very loudly opens the suite, and the spell has gone. And if you've entered Never Never Land in your imagination, you've been singing the carols, and you've entered an escapist world, I want to do the verbal equivalent of taking out my sweet wrapper and wake you up and bring you back to reality. I am telling you a story. I want to tell you a story this evening, but it's a true story. Don't in your minds think you're disappearing into some distant land. This story took place and is taking place in real time history. It's the story of God's amazing love in sending his son into the world. That the great longings of our hearts that are reflected in those films we watch at Christmas time can be realized. Really and truly realized. As God's light floods into the world and he puts things right. It's a story in which each one of us features. And insofar as our individual lives are concerned, it's a story that, well, the conclusion hasn't been written yet. Although in the future, the history of the world is not in doubt. Light will win. So I want you to look at the verses on the sheet, which will give me the theme for this story I want to tell you this evening. Let me read it again. Read it for the first time, rather. John's Gospel. John, a close friend of Jesus, says this. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. The three chapters in my story, and don't worry, it's quite a brief story, and each has a heading. Chapter one, I'm heading, Light Has Come Into the World. Taking words straight from what John says there. It's a true story because this light that came into the world really did come. There's no such place as Narnia. There's no such place as Middle Earth. You will never find a snowman or even a snow dog that flies to the North Pole. These things do not happen. We'd love them to be true, but they're not true. But this story is a true story. Light came into the world. Jesus Christ really was born in that manger in the first century. He really did grow up to become an extraordinary man. There's never been anyone like him. What a life. Integrity, compassion, truth, goodness. It happened. I don't know if you've read the New Testament at all. I was 18 before I ever read for myself one of the New Testament Gospels. I'd heard bits and pieces from RE lessons at school, but I'd never read one. And I just assumed that essentially they were describing myth. But then I read one of the New Testament Gospels. We got copies of John's Gospel from which those words appear. And I'd love you, if you haven't done so for yourself, to take it away and read it as an adult. And make your own mind up. For me, it simply did not read like myth. These things happened. Light has come in to the world. I once heard someone talking about his life before he became a Christian, came a Christian in midlife. And he said, looking back, I realized now it was as if my life was lived in a dark room with a box of matches. And every now and then I could light a match and there'd be some fun to be had. But there was darkness all around and I knew eventually that the matches would run out. There's no meaning, just occasional little shafts of light coming in. Bertrand Russell, who was an atheistic philosopher in the last century, wrote these words. He said, "There is darkness within, and when I die, there will be darkness without. There is no splendor, no vastness anywhere, only triviality for a moment, and then nothing." It's not surprising, is it, that deep down we long that isn't true. There's a deep hunger in the human heart for light in the darkness, for a light that enables us to see and make some sense of this world, for a light that banishes evil and brings justice. We long for that light. And the atheist has to say, however politely and however nicely, "I'm terribly sorry, but you're looking vain. This light does not exist. There is no God. There is no ultimate meaning. There is no objective morality. You've just got to make the most of that box of matches that you can somehow inject sunlight into your life for transitory moments." But the Bible says, light has come into the world. That's what we're celebrating this evening. There is a God. And that hunger within us that takes us to those films at Christmas time, we long that they'd be true. That hunger for justice and harmony is not an evolutionary accident. It's planted within us by a loving God who made us and wants us to know him. And he's not hiding. He made himself known in the person of his Son. We do not have to be in the dark anymore. Light has come into the world. That's chapter 1. Chapter 2. The heading now is not what we might expect. We love darkness instead of light. That's chapter 2. It's there in what John says. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. If you read the New Testament, you'll be surprised once you realize this astonishing claim is made. Jesus comes with blazing light and words of penetrating truth. And initially, people gather around him in their crowds. But it's not long before the same crowds are baying for blood. And they shout, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And sure enough, he's arrested. He's put through a mockery of a trial. He's nailed to a cross. And the light is, momentarily at least, snuffed out. A friend of mine was interviewed on Good Friday, the day in which Christians remember Jesus' death. And he was asked, "What does Good Friday teach us?" And my friend replied, "It teaches us that given half a chance, man will murder his maker." And we'd say, "Well, now hang on, I wouldn't have done that. That was a long time ago, but if we'd have been there, we'd have welcomed the light, surely, into our hearts. We like to think we would have done, but would we really?" Yesterday, I had a Christmas drinks party. We've got a rectory just next door. It's quite a large building, so I invited lots of people in. And it's probably fair to say it has seen better days, this rectory. It's a nice building. But the carpet is what a friend of mine politely calls mottled grey. which is it's just covered in stains. We have lots of children's activity in there, so the paint marks and pencil marks all over the place. So the way I can get away with it is by having a candlelight party. It's very dim light. And that way, hopefully, no one sees what it's really like. But those working in the kitchen, there's some friends who kindly help me put on the event, and they're working away in the kitchen, and they need the light so they can see what they're doing. And I give them strict instructions, keep the door shut. And occasionally, they come out, and I'm quick to shut the door, because as soon as the light comes out, it reveals all the imperfections, and there'll be pressure on me to do something about it. And so I hide the light, make sure it's very dim. And John is saying, that's what we're like with Jesus Christ. The blazing perfection of his life and beauty of his teaching is like a spotlight that shows us up. It reveals the attitudes of our hearts and the actions that even we're ashamed of. So why is it that the story of my life is not like the stories that I love to look at Christmas time? It's all messed up. And the way I work it out in my mind is because it's because of other people. They spoil the story. They get in the way. They muck up my life. But is that really true? I'll go to the pantomime. And we'll identify, won't we, with Cinderella. That's me. Or Jack. That's me. Never the ugly sister. Or the giant. And yet the Bible says we're a mixed up people. Capable, certainly, of much that's good. But mixed up. There's a lot of the ugly sister. There's a lot of the giant in us. What spoils the story of our lives is the instinct within us to place me at the center. Everyone else has got to revolve around me. Why is it that at Christmas time, when by and large we surround ourselves with the people we love the most, we still don't seem to be able to get on? And there's tension. And we go away from that family time thinking, I wish I hadn't said that. And we've blown it again. It's not been what we dreamt of. Why is that? Oh, other people play a part, no doubt. But don't we have to say, the villain, what's me included? That desire to have everything revolving around me. And if God gets in the picture, that's where he is too, out of the center. And what a mess we make of our lives because of it. We don't like the darkness, and yet we're terrified of the light. As Jesus points to what's going on in our life, we don't want to change very much. And so John says, this is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light. And so the light that came, the most perfect life that's ever lived, was snuffed out as they nailed him to a cross and he died. But wonderfully, the story's not over yet. Here's chapter 3. Chapter 3 brings us right into the present day. We're in it now. And here's the heading. God invites us to come into the light. That human attempt to snuff out the light of God failed. Jesus was nailed to a cross. He really did die. And that was not simply the result of human evil, although certainly it was. It was the loving plan of God. Because the Bible says that we deserve separation from God. We deserve death for the way we push him out of our lives and insist that we're at the center of everything. That's what we deserve. Jesus did not deserve it. He lived a perfect life, always lived in the light, in relationship with God his Father. But gladly and willingly, although he knew the cost of it, he went to the cross. And the Bible says he took that death for us. He died instead of us, that we might come back into the light and be friends with God. Death couldn't hold him. He didn't deserve to die. And so God raised him from the dead. He's alive. And he's alive today. His light still shines, and the imagery, the symbolism of this service proclaims that fact. There's light shining the darkness. And Jesus Christ still today is saying to people, come. Come into the light. That's the choice. It's there in those last two verses in that little section. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light. And there's the choice we must make. Will I stay in the darkness? It's as one writer put it, in the dark little dungeon of my own ego, which does not bring satisfaction. Or will I choose to come into the light? Now, I've no idea where you stand on all this. I've sometimes wished I had X-ray eyes and could just work out where everyone's thinking, but I don't, just to reassure you. And I don't know what it will mean for you this Christmas to come into the light. For some of you, all this is very new. And it might mean simply taking hold of one of those John's Gospels in the midst of all the fun and gaz. I hope you have a tremendous time. Put in a few minutes to read and ask yourself, could this be true? This light that came into the world. I'd love you to pick up a little booklet, which I wrote a few years ago now, called Christmas in Three Words. That's available at the door as well as John's Gospel. And have a read some stage of a Christmas time. Come to that course, Christianity Explained course. And just fill in the little sheet at the back of these green sheets. For others of us, we say, well, actually, I do believe this is true. I believe the light has come. But then we look back on last year and think of many, many ways in which we've resisted the light of Jesus. We know it's best for us to live in friendship with him. And some of you, no doubt, have drifted miles away for a long time. And God is a God of amazing love. That's what Christmas tells us. He's not keeping his distance. He knows what we're like, what a mess we've made of our lives. But he comes close. And he says, come into the light. Receive forgiveness because my son died for you. And once you've come, keep walking in the light. See, to find the happy ending, you don't have to switch off reality and turn on the television this Christmas. But the longings of our hearts that I think lead us to watch that kind of program are there because God is there. And that deep desire that everything would be right, that justice would come, harmony would come, love would prevail, that's a God-given love, a God-given hunger. And it's met in Jesus Christ. And one day he will come again. And when he comes, everything will be right. Everyone will live happily ever after if they're walking in the light, ready for him. Don't choose darkness. Choose light. May God give you a very happy Christmas.